on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 92-year-old Alan Rasmussen of Fresno, California, at the terraces at San Joaquin Gardens, where he's lived for over a decade. They call him Cowboy. Check out the photos on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and I think you'll see why. Their other nickname for him there is the Hugger. In his years teaching industrial arts at Chowchilla High School and later Cappuccino High in San Bruno, they called him Mr. R. But during World War II, he answered to medic. Let's pick things up with his arrival in France with the 71st Infantry Division in late 1944.
They get us up in these tents, and it was muddy. The mud was about 6 inches deep. And so he got the rumor that Patton, General George Patton, was going to come down to look at our division. So the officers, bless their pointed heads, they had us all out there working. Had us medics out there digging ditches around this darn tent. Patton walked up, and he's a pretty rough character. He said to the colonel, chicken colonel, three-star general, it's like a master sergeant talking to a buck private.
Right.
He turned around, colonel, you know, what in the hell are these damn medics digging into this so-and-so mud? Well, colonel couldn't hardly talk. He was mumbling something. He said, colonel, he said, if I take this division in my army, he says, I see any of your men working, you're going to be a private. Medics do not do this kind of work. You get them in the darn tent, and you teach them first aid so they'll know how to take care of those poor buggers that get hit, get wounded. Okay, so we never worked at anything like that again. That was my first meeting with Patton.
You have Patton to thank for that.
Oh, he was a great guy, I'll tell you. Patton's the greatest. He loved his men. Boy, if his guys, they never got in trouble because nobody else would mess with us, even the other officers.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, we were there for a few days. Then we hit the line. We went down, fought down to the Rhine River. First few days on combat is a whole different lifestyle. See, in World War II, less than 10% of the men and women in uniform actually saw combat. So if you were a combat soldier, you were a whole lot different than what you did. So we hit the line, and we learned a lot in those first few days. It was pretty exciting.
Were you scared?
No. No, I had the Lord. I knew he was taking care of me by that time. Because I had accepted Christ when I was working at Northrop. I didn't tell you that, but first, second, and third night I was working there, this young fellow named Bill Reed came up and sat by me and talked to me. He said, I attend a little church here in Hawthorne. He said, why don't you come down? A lot of young people have moved from all over the United States here, and you can get acquainted. So I did.
Mm-hmm.
And one night, I guess it was after maybe a month or so, the pastor did a real Billy Graham altar call. I don't know whether I flew or walked or crawled down, went down front and accepted Christ as my Savior. So all through this wartime, I had that.
What did that do for you? What kind of?
No fear.
No fear.
No fear.
Because you knew where you were going.
I knew where I was going.
I'm sure you had some concern for Millie and that baby that you were hoping you'd get to meet someday.
I'll tell you about that. remember the lady in the that talked to me and got in the army.
Right.
Remember her, okay? So anyway, we fought through to the Rhine, and the orders were we're transferring up to Patton's Third Army. They were getting done with the Battle of the Bulge. So we got up there, and we crossed the river at Mines on Pontoon Bridge, start chasing the Germans. By that time, they're pretty well whipped after Battle of the Bulge, but they were still in fighting mood. We medics never really knew where we were or what was going on. Our job was to focus on the wounded. The word medic hollered out was important to us.
So I bet you can still hear that sometimes.
Oh, I can. And you know, I love the job because I was helping them.
Can you give us an example? Because most of us, Claire, you just said most World War II veterans,
yep,
even didn't see,
right,
real combat the way you did,
right,
in the infantry.
Okay, I will tell you this one story. It was getting towards the, probably in April or May, and we would fight with the Germans during the day, and they were retreating, and they'd get into a little village or something and dig in. And so then we would generally, maybe a day or so, would hit the village and try and clean them out. So we had the orders. We had run, they were in the village, we were out in the woods around. So we got the order, we're going to move out on them next morning at 7 o'clock. So, 7 o'clock, a half-track reconnaissance vehicle, for some reason, got out in the road heading towards the village. We got hit by a projectile from a German 88, which was on a tank. They backed the tank into a building and put a camouflage net in front of it. Didn't see it.
Mm.
So they hit this reconnaissance vehicle dead center. Three guys killed, others wounded. So the medics had to go out and take care of the wounded, get them off the field back to the aid station. So So the Germans did not shoot our medics. We did not shoot theirs. There was a deal during World War One that said, don't shoot the medics. But even so, we lost a higher percentage of medics than we did riflemen. We had to go out and take care of where they were. But anyway, get back on the line, and at 8 o'clock, Lieutenant Tarbell was second lieutenant, standing about 10, 12 feet on my left. So when it got 8 o'clock, I said, okay, guys, let's go get him. He caught a 30 caliber in his shoulder, broke his shoulder, punctured his lung. Well, he hit the ground. I was over there and saw what happened. We had tubes of petrolatum, Vaseline, and we put a circle of that around the hole, put a piece of cellophane over it. If it came out the other side, we'd patch the other side too, put a compressed bandage out. Didn't want the air to get into the lung cavity because it got in there, it collapsed the lung, they died. You got to get that on there quick. So we got that all fixed up on him and sent him back to the aid station, went away. So the war went on. Then I had hepatitis, which affects your liver. And I knew I had it. Our doctor, we used to call him the vet, the horse doctor, because he was rough. I told myself I got hepatitis. I'd lost about 20, 25 pounds. You know, at my weight, you don't lose that kind of weight. I was getting weak. So I was getting so darn weak that I couldn't even carry one end of a litter anymore.
And you'd probably contracted it from some of the people you were treating, huh? Or
no,
taking care?
I think it was something we were eating.
Oh, okay.
Because we sort of lived off the land once we hit Germany. We'd catch a chicken. One guy went up in the attics of a barn and beat squabs down. I was a fisherman. I threw a hand grenade in the stream and pulled the fish out. And we were trying to cook stuff on our own. That's probably where it started. So anyway, went in the aid station. The doc said, Rasmussen, come over and help me. I need help. So he's working. The other guy's working there too, you know. And so I went over and helped him. And we had three or four litters on the floor and walking wounded. So he, exact words, he said, get the hell out of here and go out and find another doc. Well, do you believe in angels?
Sure.
I do. Okay. So we had set up, this is getting towards the end of the war, we'd set up the aid station in a building. I walk outdoor down about six steps, start down the street. Here comes this officer towards me. Well, I was going to say, hey, doc, we need help. Because I could see on his lapels he had the medical badge. But before I had time to say anything, he said, why in the aren't you in the hospital? You look like you're about dead. I said, no, sir. This guy was a major. So I said, you're a doctor. I said, he won't sign me out. And I said, I'll fill out my book. He said, I can't do that. You're not in my outfit. He said, I'll see what we can do. So he said, you need help. Let's go. And he said to my doctor, he said, your guy has hepatitis pretty bad. Are you going to send him back? Yeah, I'm going to send him back. Of course, he's a major now, and our doctor was a first lieutenant. So that outranked him a few layers. So he kept at him. He said, boy, he's got it pretty bad. You know, these guys, you can die from that. Yeah, I'm going to send him back. So the doctor finally said, yeah, I'm sending him back soon. Well, I had a little book about, 3 by 6 inches that I wrote down the guy's name, his serial number, and all about him when he was wounded. And that then had a hard copy that had a string on it. You tied on the button on the front of his shirt. That went with him back through the field, back through the different hospitals. So anyway, finally, I doctor, well, I'll send him back. So I took my book and filled it out, laid it on this guy's chest that we were working on, and handed him my pencil. He signed it. So I went out, picked up my personal stuff, went and got an ambulance, and headed back.
Mm-hmm.
Went back to a field hospital, and from there flown back to a big hospital in Paris. Boy, pretty beautiful. First 2 months on the line, no bath, no change of clothes, sleeping in the snow, sleeping in the mud, all that kind of stuff. We were dirty continually. Well, they didn't have any facilities to clean me up at the field hospital, and we had to wait about 2 days. Of course, being I was not critical as far as needing immediate help, they would send out the more severely wounded before me. Finally, they said, okay, get your clothes back on. My clothes were dirty. I take them off. They gave me a pair of pajamas and a robe. Nope, you can't take that. You got to leave it. So I had to put my clothes back on. They got wet from the wet ground. I must have stunk to high heaven. So he get me on a plane, old C-47, flew me back, got off the plane. Cute little Red Cross gal came up. Oh, how can I help you? Is there anything you need? Well, I said, I haven't had a comb for about 2 or 3 months. She pulls a comb out of her little kit she's carrying with her, and she started to comb my hair. I said, you didn't get close to me. I probably smell pretty bad. Oh, no, it's okay. So I went back to the hospital. We were isolated. They had 8 of us that had hepatitis in one room. So I was there. Then the war was over about a week after I hit the hospital. And I was trying to contact my wife. Well, I contacted the Red Cross fellow, And he came up, gave me information. So they'd cablegram from Europe to USA, probably to New York, and from there, telephone down to Los Angeles, telephone down to Hawthorne. So I'd get a cable. It took about 3 days to get the message there and back. So I'd get a cablegram, bring it out to me, and no baby yet, everything's okay. Probably May 15th or 20th, something like that. War was over. So finally, they said, well, you're okay. Go back to your outfit. So I suited up, was heading out. I had to change my money. The army made invasion currency because the German mark was not worth anything at all. So I had to change my French money into German money. So they had this little office, walked in there, and a lieutenant was sitting at the desk, and I laid my money on the counter, and he counted out and gave me the invasion currency. Well, he filled out a slip. He said, you have to sign this. So I signed it. He looked at it like that. I've seen that name someplace. Well, I said, yeah. He said, he lifted up the pad on his desk and pulled out a cablegram. The cablegram was following me. He opened it up. He didn't give it to me, just, you know, lieutenant and a private. Oh, no, I was a corporal. he opened that thing up and read it to me. He said, oh, yeah, you got a baby boy. Everything's fine. I grabbed that darn cablegram. I headed for the door. And he said, hey, get back here. What's the problem? He said, you forgot your money.
You had something more valuable to in your hand, yeah. Huh?
So anyway, back to my outfit. We started training to go to the Pacific. But you want me to give you a tragic story in during the war? Injuries would go through our aid station to field hospital and back, and they sent the replacements back up through the same route. Getting towards the end of the war, three replacements came in, and they came down. They were sent to the sergeant in charge of the company. So he shook their hands and said, well, guys, he said, you're in combat here. It was quiet right then. He said, it'll get bad. He said, I'm going to tell you exactly what you do and what you don't do. You darn well pay attention. So he said, number one, the password for the day, and this is the right one, was mustard cluster. He said, if you go out someplace and somebody's standing, he says, mustard, you darn well better say cluster. He told him about stay in your foxhole at night. If you have to go to the bathroom, he said, do it in your helmet, throw it over the side or whatever. He said, but don't get out of your darn foxhole. He told him all this stuff they had to watch out for. It was all, you know, second nature for us. So it was getting pretty dark. So he said, this one guy, he said, okay, go down this street. There's buildings there. He said, stay on this side of the street. And down at the corner, there's a guard down there. He's been on for 2 hours. You go down and replace him. These guys, they weren't paying much attention. I knew it because I'm a people person. You get to be a people person when you're in situations like that. So the guy took off down the street, sort of staggering along. It was about 100 yards down there, I guess, and we heard a rifle shot. Medic, I ran down there. This guy was on the ground, dead. The guard on the corner had challenged him. He said, oh, he said, I didn't know. He was all upset, you know, and I said, cool down. What happened? Well, I said mustard, and he didn't reply. I said it twice. He kept coming. I shot him. Well, I said, you get that out of your mind as best you can. He said, you did your job. You're right. He's wrong. So we hauled him off the field. Next morning, it was starting to get daylight, and you could just faintly see things moving around. And there were a few rifle shots going on one way or the other. And I heard medic. I rushed over there, and here this one, there were three guys. The second guy was laying there on the ground dead. He'd gotten out of his foxhole, and I guess he had to go potty, so he went around a bush, and he got between him and the enemy. Well, the guy, we figured it was probably a German with a night scope that can start shooting when it's still fairly dark. He shot him and killed him. So, KIA, tag on him, hauled him out, by the side of the road or someplace, marked him. About an hour later, another shot on our side, in our place, again, medic. I went over, and the third guy had laid his rifle right here, like that, and pulled the trigger. It took the bone right out of his leg. So I tourniqueted his leg, stopped the bleeding, got it all banged up so he wouldn't get dirt in it. Come on later, heading back to aid station. Well, he was screaming, crying, calling for his mother. He was just went psycho. A chaplain came over and was trying to talk to him. Three guys in less than 12 hours, three dead. Why? They didn't pay attention. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I'm going to go back. I'm going to tell you this story while I remember it.
All right.
I'm teaching high school. Kids are going into the service during the Vietnam War, and I would tell my senior class, I'd tell them these stories. I told them a story about the password. Oh, I don't know, it was about 15 years after this one guy had heard the story. He was now an adult, probably, well, 15 years, he was probably hitting 30. I see him walking across the yard into my room. I recognized him, came in, shook his hand. How you doing? Well, he said, I got a story for you, Mr. R. What's that? Well, he said, last night I was going home from work. And I stopped at a little bar down here in Half Moon Bay, sat down at the counter, and this guy sitting next to me looked familiar. So I said, did you go to Capuchin High School? He said, yep, I did too. So I said, I thought I'd try something on. I said to him, I said, mustard? He said, clustered. Just like that. 15 years after I tell him the story, he remembered. But that poor bugger overseas, he couldn't remember that for five minutes.
Yeah, I could see how that would stick.
Yeah. So anyway, the guys, the soldiers that we had, I'm sure it was the same way every place. The average soldier was, he was great. They didn't complain. If they're wounded, you bang them up. If you had to leave them, well, I did say, don't take my rifle, you know. They were really learned to be tough, and I admired them so much for that.
And you're helping us understand why that's the case. It's break time again. When we come back, an incredible coincidence. Or was it? Out of more than 16 million Americans who served in World War II, Mr. Rasmussen's connection to one in particular provided him with an opportunity to help bring healing to a grieving family. This one might make your jaw drop just a little, and it might make your eyes water too. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.